You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Any questions or anything to share? In the first part, I wasn't sure what you meant by the words, the word boredom and the word escape, or did you just mean... I didn't know if you were asking about the word or just the thing. Okay.
I mean, you know, in this context, when, for example, you choose to meditate.
Yeah.
And then before we know it, you're there, and then you're there.
Yeah. And boredom being an escape and escape being boring. Yeah. That's the question for today, I would say. Like, by day 3 or day 10, depending, you realize, oh, it's actually not about entertainment, is it? They're not going to keep entertaining me. It's going to be the same good food, the same good place, and that's all. So, first of all, it's mostly just good that you feel fascinated and keep experiencing, and there's so much to learn. And one part of that can be when there's a sensation of maybe this is boredom, being curious about that, feeling it in the body, and sometimes just with very little, like just a little bit of sniffing around, like, what is this? A little bit, hardly, but just feeling it and just a little curious. But hardly any movement towards curiosity, mostly just receiving the experience as it is. Something can kind of just open up about it, which can be partly that a realization that sometimes boredom is actually aversion, and then getting clear on, oh, it's like simplifying the equation or untying the knot. It's like, oh, it's just aversion to that sound or that feeling in my knee or that memory or that whatever. Ah, that's what it is. That's all. Something like that. Sometimes it gets maybe more honest inside, we can say. It's not actually boring at all. There's something kind of some friction that has energy in it. And boredom is a way to kind of tamp it down. There's also just, we've gotten so used to having a fever, kind of. Like, we've gotten so used to, it's kind of like maybe being on a bicycle that's not connected, so we're just used to pedaling, pedaling, pedaling. Even if we're staying still, we're just pedaling. And then the situation invites us to realize that addiction or that habit or whatever. And that can be hard just because we don't like to think of ourselves as being that. Silly. Like, really, for no reason. Most of what we're busy with, for no reason, we're busy with it. And it isn't going anywhere. And we don't really want it to. Like, in that thing that's getting busy with it, it doesn't actually want to go anywhere. So sometimes just the interest in what is boredom can lead around to kind of almost a reversal, that the thing that was like wanting it to be more interesting and entertaining is boring. That addiction to just be occupied going nowhere is actually boring. Just keep on pedaling no matter what, keep on pedaling no matter what, keep on pedaling no matter what. While you do anything else, keep on pedaling. It is actually boring. And yet, to kind of face that, I think there needs to be preparation for us to be able to face that. And preparation, as I have said before, is a lot is about kindness. And sense of humor, like, isn't that hilarious? And tragic, but also funny. And then it's kind of like, I didn't come up in the koan style of Zen at all, and I had also not that much Zen training. I just like Zen poetry. But the idea of a koan and the kind of the way that people talk about kind of getting they get the hang of koans, they kind of get the trick of it, what it is, what it's trying to do. And so that kind of koan of the prickly, the difficult emotions, it's usually some kind of reversal that's happening if we go into it. Like, boredom is boring. If we go into it, we find out that what it's saying, like it's saying that it wants to do something more purposeful or interesting or fulfilling or whatever reason it has. But in fact, what it's doing is exactly not that. Does that make sense? And most everything that has a charge to it, an emotional charge, will be that. It'll be the reverse is true. So if there's... like, I really don't want to waste time. And that can be, you know, close to a really sincere, good, well-intentioned, you know, approach to practice. But when there's the emotional charge, there's some unclear, unhonest energy mixed in. I don't want to waste time. If we go into it, we kind of open the clamshell somehow or slip in there somehow, and we find out that what don't want to waste time does is waste time. In the most important way, as well as in silly ways. So it's not just that thing of being in, you know, I don't want to waste time, I gotta hurry, that of course then we leave the key over there and the hat over there and we're definitely 15 minutes later than we would have been if we'd just gone. There's that, of course. I think we all could recognize, remember moments like that, but also in a more important way inside. I don't want to waste time. If it would be I really want to honor this lifetime. I know it could end any moment. And that at least as far as they say that you can really meditate when you're alive, but you can't really meditate when you're dead. I don't know because I don't remember, but that's what they say. So maybe it's better to really honor this day. There's like a real good and sincere kind of, but then the charge of I don't want to waste time, or I have to honor this precious day, when it starts to get tight, then I've already lost track of honoring this precious day. I've already gone away from what I said I wanted. So getting the trick of that clamshell or koan or whatever of the mind, when there's a charge, there's a reversal. There's a hypocrisy, there's a dishonesty. But what's cool is that it's actually pointing to this specific issue. If there's something that bothers me, if there's something that I can't stop thinking about, then that specific issue is an issue, probably somehow in reverse. And so if we could not get so upset that we're so angry about such and such, why am I so irritated by such and such a thing? There was a friend of ours who was here on a longer retreat a few years ago, and kind of tragic, kind of funny, that there was one sound in the early morning that just drove her crazy, one of the animal sounds. Drove her crazy. She couldn't sleep, you know, it's like so hard for her. And so something around, wherever we go, there'll be something that gets us, and if we can just go with that, great. It's a pointer, but in the other direction. Not that sound that's bothering me, but something in there if I go in. That's around whatever it was for her, invasion or... And escape we can play with in also a few ways, but mostly just like to trust your experience, so noticing and letting your own experience wash over you. So one way of noticing escape is just that the mind doesn't want to stay here. And one way with that is that we just keep bringing it back. And we acknowledge that that's, the mind is simply following its training to go out, to go out, to go out, to go out. That's all it's doing. And so is it escape? It's following its training. It's actually not escaping from its training. And then we go, okay, but what is this training? And then also, what's noticing that the mind is going and coming, going and coming? What's that? And so even a preoccupation with how my mind seems to be escaping, following it, going out, going out. A preoccupation with how my mind keeps going away could be an escape from letting that be and staying just as much as I can, as true as I can to that thing in a human being that can notice the mind going away and coming back. So again, with words, it can either get confusing or we can really go with our experience, and there's so many ways of learning about escape and boredom and so on. I think about escape, feeling for, without making it spectacular or like into a big thing, but that we can feel for the fundamental escape. And it might be so similar to that mind escape thing, that something can notice the mind has escaped. And then, is that escape? Etc. Not getting lost in all those questions, but like, wait. What would be interested in making a problem out of that could lead us closer to the more fundamental escape. What's interested in making a problem out of it? And so feeling why a fundamental escape might happen, like why is it that we don't want to know what we are? How did that come about? Not as this a personal tangle, but wow. Like, look at all of us and the planet and for thousands of years. But even if we just stick with people that we know. And then, but as a sincere question, not just like throwing up our hand, like, oh my God, despair or whatever. And I think there's two, we can think of two sides of it just for now. There's, of course, so much in this, but one is the part of us that's doing the activity of, or would do the activity of trying to find out what I am. Let's say the digging part. When the digging part, when we come close to something that feels really intimate, what happens? That just as a question, as a practice. And maybe if we accept it to be a kind of process where the first contact, we're immediately gone. But then again, somehow we're back and kicked out again. And who said it shouldn't be like that? There could be something important about that. For example, that getting that close to something with that much energy, that's not like a trapped emotional charge of energy. It's like a live charge or live energy. It's intense, there's intensity in what feels more true or intimate or untangled, raw. And so at least there's the need to let our system come to be able to bear that intensity. If we would just like think that we should just be straight in it, it would probably just burn out all of our sockets or whatever. Like the electrical, the wiring, our wiring, let's say. I said sockets, which is where you plug in. Yeah.
That this too muchness.
Yeah.
It's at least I've normally heard it more in terms of pain and the kind of aversion, but not in terms of beauty or this, you know, that this kind of intensity that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is. It's not explained so much.
I know.
Is there a reason?
Well, I think the reason is all of this. Why are we avoiding what we are? I think it's that question. And I think also culturally, but just something in us is attracted to the negative and the problematic view, the view of things as problematic. So What I really think is that the intensity of the beautiful is more naked. The intensity of the painful, we're still somehow hiding a bit in something, story or whatever, something of poor me or something of, and the beautiful just feels like it just there's nothing of that. It's wiped away. And so, I guess it's maybe just that simple, that the part of us that's doing the digging doesn't want to disappear, doesn't want to be wiped away, doesn't want to know it doesn't exist or whatever. And so, as we're practicing, if it can at least gradually, like fluffing out that doer, the one that's active, the one that's digging, last week we talked about intention. So what the part that we think we're doing, that part of us that we think is doing, if it can gradually notice that it keeps having the ground pulled out from under it, or and that it's okay that there's no bottom, there's no floor, that there is still something of a person, and that what there isn't is really okay and unburdening to let it not be true or not be needed or not be what it says it was. So let all that be hypocrisy. Let all that be this doing the opposite of what it says it wants. Because it is sweet for something that is something like a person with the intensity and the not there-ness that's also true. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was also thinking that it's for me to also, it has to do with feeling safe. And
yes.
And exactly what totally. The connection is, but like that spiritiness is where I feel safe.
Yeah.
And it's where I can really enjoy nature, which I can't seem to when I'm back in Delhi.
Yeah.
Like the moon doesn't mean anything. Back in Delhi, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And that maybe is part of what I mean by the system coming to be able to bear the intensity, the energy, that disorientation, to even enjoy the disorientation of not being what I thought, etc. So actually, I think that's what I was, when I said, I think there's two things about escape I wanted to say. I think the other part was this, why don't we even talk about the intensity of beauty and that whole process and how hard it can be to feel safe enough to let that just burn through or whatever. So, thank you. I have a poem that's also, of course, about this in a way. By Wendell Berry. It's a long poem, and so I don't know how far we'll get into it, but we'll just slowly go through however much fits for now. So the first part, I think I'll read through it, and if you don't know as much English, we'll come back, don't worry, but I'll just read through it and can also give you the music of the poem, and then we'll come back. If that's okay. I climb up through the thicket, a bird's song somewhere within it, the singer unfound within the song, resounding within itself and around itself. It might come from anywhere, from everywhere. The whole air vibrant with it, every leaf a tongue. I climb up through the thicket, a bird song somewhere within it, the singer unfound within the song, resounding within itself and around itself. It might come from anywhere, from everywhere. The whole air vibrant with it, every leaf a tongue. So he's just walking up through some woods, thicket, and there are birds. The singer unfound within the song. I think that might be my favorite line of the year. The singer unfound within the song. So when we feel that sense of safety that Jayaji described, and there's a relaxing, which usually takes decades of just relaxing and loosening and then finding more and more of that. And that's so lovely. it's so not like an obstacle or yucky or anything. It's so lovely. But in that loosening, relaxing, and letting the song happen, and the not making up and holding in place the sense of the doer of the song, not sticking to the sense of subject-object, of me listening to that, but participating in that whole thing. I mean, of course, and especially this particular poem, which is all about the, so many ways that we could talk about this poem. So whatever I'm saying is not like the only way, of course. The singer unfound within the song, resounding within itself and around itself. It might come from anywhere, from everywhere. The whole air vibrant with it, every leaf a tongue. So some, I think here, I love this poem for here. We were going to be by the lake, so that was going to be good, but a tongue. So just the feeling of, which can happen sometimes, hearing the music of this place with the feeling of that Jaiji is calling safety or just restedness or whatever. And a way of listening that can happen that's stops being about location in the same way. If it's location, it's more of like a spaciousness, and we start to maybe feel ourselves as big as the sounds, the trees. Like we're in that and part of and seamless with that whole space. So it's just a different kind of perception or listening. I think I need to write Wendell Berry and ask if he read Zen poems or what. Because reading Ikkyu and Ryokan, and now it's just like, did he know, or is it just because it's experiential? So it might come from anywhere, from everywhere. Loosening into that kind of space that we are participating in. And then the decision we were hoping for comes from anywhere or everywhere. The whole air vibrant with it. Vibrant, like, it's a great word here because it's like alive, but has that vibration in it. Every leaf a tongue, feeling even things that we think of as not participating in voice and sound and communication, absolutely being part of that communication. And still, I think I like in the poem that it starts with this word, I climb up through the thicket. It's not like we just want to cut out and get rid of that part that's digging, that's trying its best to be sincere and find out what's what. He's climbing up through the thicket, like he's climbing up through the thicket. Thicket, so it's like the trees are close together or whatever. It's not just a nice big wide path or something, or a big open field. So it's so easy to keep thinking that we've got it wrong, that we should be like resounding with the song within and all around and everywhere. It's at the same time we're climbing up through the thicket, we're digging down into what we haven't ever seen and we can't see yet. And when we get in touch with it, it's suddenly gone. And we never know if it will come back, or if we will come back, or what comes to what. And at the same time, something is singing. And we're walking through that. And sometimes aware of being part of it. This morning we were walking through the monkeys, whoever came on the walk, through the langur. And I do feel that it was some kind of blessing that they were right, like a halo around the path. And we were walking through them, and even to smell them. And yet they were scared of us. And when we would look at them, they were even more scared of us. They ran away. And you could feel and smell the fear. There was one, like, much bigger baby, you know, how they hold on, but it didn't really fit on the stomach of the mother anymore. But it was still holding on. And they were both trying to, like, accommodate the fear that the smaller one felt. And maybe if we lived here, we would get to know those monkeys. Like already this year, I feel like I start to get it's part of that whole, like, it's like a bird song. It's part of this whole thing, the way what if they didn't like descend the mountain sort of every 5 days or so and then go down that way and then go down that way. What would happen? What would be disordered by that way that they come through as part of this place? So maybe if we would be here a long time, we would know them, and they would know us, and they would come to know that our looking wasn't a threat, but an awe.
Maybe they're back at their camp, you know, lying down. There's just one sitting there, just
a killer. And talking about those people, those other monkeys, the hairless monkeys, or mostly hairless monkeys. Don't they have that? Some of them have that funny hair on top of their head.
There's one I saw today, just now, before I came in, and he had, just a stump of an arm.
Mm-hmm. There's a few.
Yeah.
That must be really difficult to be a monkey, just one arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen a few with that, missing the bottom, the forearm.
Is it okay to say hello to them if you're passing by?
I think, unless we would stay here longer, what I felt was when I gave them the message, like, we're ground people and you're tree people and we're peaceful and we send you blessings, that felt better than looking at them. Looking at them felt like it really freaked them out. And so, even though I wanted to look at them, I love their fur, I found myself really, like, as if I would absorb the leaves and the ground with my eyes, or my eyes be absorbed into the ground or something, like trying to give them the message, like, we're all okay and we're ground people and you have the ground and the trees. That was my feeling for now. So I was saying hello, but I wasn't like, saying hello. Can I just finish where I was going with that? The reason I brought the monkeys up. Thanks. I think it's like that inside us, and that so much of what we would meet escapes us. It runs away from us for kind of good reason, because we've learned to be so mean, as Manish was saying yesterday. We've learned to be so harsh. And so finding a way with monkeys, inner and outer, like finding a way that things don't escape us, they don't feel they have to escape us, that our way of looking is not threatening.
Along very similar lines, in discovering this obsession you have with monkeys, I felt compelled to return for a walk. And I did stare from a healthy distance. And they were very aware of my presence for a little while, but I was pretty still when I sat down. And once they, I think, got over their fear and stopped looking at me, amazing to watch, they basically did three things. They were either caring, like grooming or hugging each other, playing with each other, wrestling and such, or pausing. And I was so moved. Like, basically, there wasn't really a pause in the caring, but the monkeys that were wrestling with each other were like, wrestle, wrestle, wrestle. And they'd just stop and like... and then they'd like jump up again. Wrestle, wrestle, wrestle. And it was so beautiful. And I thought it was also so funny because in so many meditation spaces, people talk about monkey mind as the thing to tame and get rid of.
Yeah.
Like, that's the mind that I'm kind of cultivating. I'm either caring, I'm playing, and after I play for a little bit, I just pause. And then I play again. Thank you.
Yeah.
And they did that only after they felt safe.
Yeah. Anything else?
Something you said just made me have this memory of something that's happened today, which I just thought I was sure. So I've complained of this this realization of this, like, much of it's inferior and below on everything, which seems to just be ever present in very subtle ways. I mean, the big blunders and the successes are obvious, but there just seems to be this perpetual, believable belief.
Yeah.
And then this morning, there was this, like, wonderful meditation. And then that was that. It was just that. But then over lunch, I just couldn't sit in, but it was just felt good. And you just saying then that it just escaped. I just couldn't. It's like what was there was like this smug. Suddenly what should have just been such allowing, just such deep contentment, just was lost. You just couldn't, just have escaped. And you're just saying that maybe
yeah.
Not.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because there was one other part about the escape thing that... I mean, it's great to be really just, in a really basic way, noticing how much we escape from just being here, being ourselves, being with what is. noticing when it's time to stop being with what that is and be with something else that also is. That's, this is happening, but this is also happening, changing the channels, just, and all the escaping that goes on. Yeah, very good basic idea. And hard. But I think there's also a kind of other way, like I was saying, that it's not, it, I don't see it as a terrible thing or a torture or anything, that that things have their own timing and it just keeps loosening, relaxing into more intimacy, honesty, discovery, intensity, contentment, etc. That mind that's gonna go smug about it, so what? It doesn't touch the experience. It's just doing its own thing. You know? And just the fact that it can't ever reach through, that all that's, all the explanation, description, judgment, measurement, is just its own thing going on. It can't actually touch that. Can't catch it and do anything to it. Can't ruin it. And so then you, when smug comes, okay, feeling smug, I mean, feeling the feeling of smugness, I don't mean like, yeah. Smug would be like proud of how I did that meditation that I don't know how it happened. Just feeling that can be, it's almost like when the fog burns off, just letting it be felt on its way out.
Yeah, it really brought to mind when you said love what you love. Because I thought actually that's always sound such a simple phrase, but actually there I was trying to just love the feeling and then smug. Mm-hmm.
So don't let smug get you down. It can't touch. It can't touch what you love, or your love of it. Yeah. Okay, let's just rest in the silence for a moment or two together.